to Psalm 14.
Psalm 14. It's where we'll begin as we study together this part of our time together this morning. Psalm 14. I'm sitting on the stool because for all those months I sat on the stool and I really liked it. And so I thought, why not in this time that we kind of have set aside as a special time where we're going to have at least a couple of times a month this little assembly where I'm going to be speaking to you, why not break out the stool? I like the stool. I mean, if I'm standing here, I can't swivel like this. So anyway, good to see you. We have some visitors with us. Thank you for being here. We're glad that you're here and excited that you're going to be able to share with us in this study of God's Word as we take this time to think for a little while in a straight line about something from God's Word that we're going to piece together from some different passages here. Psalm 14 and verse 1 says, "The fool says in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt, they do abominable deeds, there is none who does good. The Lord looks down from heaven on the children of man to see if there are any who understand, who seek after God. They have all turned aside. Together they have become corrupt. There is none who does good, not even one. Have they no knowledge, all the evildoers who eat up my people as they eat bread and do not call upon the Lord?" So verse 1 says, the fool says in his heart, there is no God. And I have seen this verse used as a zinger against atheists. See, bam, there it is. The fool says in his heart, there is no God. See, atheists are fools. God says atheism is what fools believe. Now, to be sure, God is against atheism, which is a really strange thing to say. God is against atheism. Like, atheism is not a biblical idea. But I think that's not what this passage is saying. And when we take this passage that way, I think we miss the force of it. We miss something that's very important, not just for atheists, but also for believers. See, what this verse and this passage is actually talking about is what we might call practical atheism. People who, no matter what they may say about God, live as though God doesn't exist. That's the concern of the psalmist. They live as fools because in their hearts they say there is no God. So I want to talk for a minute about this statement. Not all atheists are fools, but all fools are atheists. And I want to bend your mind about that for a few minutes. Think about how that can be true. Not everyone who is an atheist may be a fool, especially in the biblical sense, but everyone who is a fool in the biblical sense is an atheist on this level. So what I'm getting at is that when we encounter the word fool in the Bible, we're talking about more than just someone who doesn't have a lot of sense. They're not very intellectual. They're not very smart. The idea of the fool in the Bible is a practical idea. They live in a way that shows they are fools. They make bad choices. They live in foolish ways. Or as we might say from that movie, stupid is as stupid does. Okay, it's not so much the intellect as it is the decisions and how that plays out in life. And in the same way, when I use the word atheist here, and what we're going to talk about this morning about practical atheism, we're not really talking about an intellectual stance. You know, I've come to this conclusion in my studies and my researches that there is no God. But we're talking about something practical, that on a practical level, I live as if there is no God. So what I'm trying to do and what I believe the Scriptures are doing is to help us see more than just what our mouths say, but more about what our lives tell us about our faith in God. So, for example, not every atheist might live as a fool. That is, atheists, given the fact that they might say or affirm that there is no God, may still live in a way that shows the wisdom that would come from believing in God. They may live a wise life. But everyone who lives like a fool, practically speaking, is an atheist. Psalm 14 and verse 4, it says, "Have they no knowledge, all the evildoers who eat up my people as they eat bread and do not call upon the Lord? There they are in great terror, for God is with the generation of the righteous. You would shame the plans of the poor, but the Lord is his refuge." So he is talking about people who don't just say there's no God, they say in their heart there is no God, and they live this way. So they are evildoers who eat up my people and don't think about the fact that they have God as their refuge. They don't think about the fact that God will avenge. Or verse 6, you shame the plans of the poor, but the Lord is his refuge. That's not a consideration in their minds. And so, practically speaking, they're atheists. Turn back a page or two to Psalm 10. In Psalm 10, I want to begin in verse 2. Psalm 10 and verse 2 says, in arrogance the wicked hotly pursue the poor. Let them be caught in the schemes that they have devised. For the wicked boasts of the desires of his soul, and the one greedy for gain curses and renounces the Lord. In the pride of his face the wicked does not seek him. All his thoughts are, there is no God. His ways prosper at all times. Your judgments are on high out of his sight. For all his as for all his foes, he puffs at them. He says in his heart, I shall not be moved. Throughout all generations I shall not meet adversity. His mouth is filled with cursing and deceit and oppression. Under his tongue are mischief and iniquity. He sits in ambush in the villages and hiding places. He murders the innocent. His eyes stealthily watch for the helpless. He lurks in ambush like a lion in his thicket. He lurks that he may seize the poor. He seizes the poor when he draws them into his net. The helpless are crushed, sink down, and fall by his might. He says in his heart, God has forgotten. He has hidden his face. He will never see it. Arise, O Lord, O God, lift up your hand. Forget not the afflicted. Why does the wicked renounce God and say in his heart, you will not call to account? But you do see, for you take note, for you note mischief and vexation, that it may take it, you may take it into your hands. To you the helpless commits himself. You have been the helper of the fatherless. Now I want you to notice that several times the wicked person described in Psalm 10, we're given insight into his thought life. What's he thinking like? So in verse 4, he is thinking, there is no God. Verse 6, he says in his heart, I shall not be moved. That is, I'm doing great and I'm always going to do great. Things are always going to be the way they are now. Verse 11, he has said in his heart, God has forgotten. He has hidden his face. He'll never see it. And then verse 13, you'll not call to account. That's what he's thinking. Now, it might not be what he's saying, and there's a difference there. Because when we focus on atheism in the intellectual sense, we often talk about atheism as a declaration. If you are an atheist, you believe certain things and you're willing to say them. This is not about what he says. It's about how what he lives reflects what's really in his heart. And what's really in his heart is that there is no God. No one sees. No one pays attention. No one keeps track. No one calls me to account. No one will ever know. And when we think that way, whatever we may say about God, we are living as if there is no God. We are living as fools. And so, we might not say it, but we become fools because all fools at heart are atheists. I think it's very interesting that in this text, there is a focus on the helpless. Look again at verse 8, Psalm 10 and verse 8. He sits in ambush in the villages and hiding places. He murders the innocent. His eyes stealthily watch for the helpless. He lurks in ambush like a lion in his thicket. He lurks that he may seize the poor. He seizes the poor when he draws them into his net. The helpless are crushed, sink down, and fall by his might. Focus on the helpless. Since these people are weaker, the one who is stronger feels he has impunity. He can do whatever he wants. No one's going to pay attention. What can they do? What can the poor do to respond to this? And so they act as though, well, if they can't avenge themselves, no one else is paying attention. I won't get in trouble. I'll do what I want. Living as if there is no God to call us to account for the things that we do. And so they end up making foolish choices because of that belief. This really rings a bell for me with the current string of sex scandals that have come out in the last few weeks and months. Because it just seems like, I don't know how much you guys pay attention to the newspapers, but it seems like every day there's some new scandal that's revealed. And sometimes it's Hollywood, and sometimes it's politics. Sometimes it's just different industries that are racked by these accusations and these things that have gone on. And generally, the idea behind that is that someone in power has done something wrong and abused their position in some way. And then the reason nothing comes out is because they're more powerful. And so they squash that or they threaten. And it's the same idea. I can do what I want and no one will know. And I believe it's a very healthy thing for us when these things come out because it reminds us that the idea that I can do whatever I want and no one will ever know is absurd. That doesn't happen in life. It doesn't happen whether you're thinking about situations like that or you're thinking about things you're going to hide from someone. That's not the way life works. The Bible assures us of that. But in particular, when we know about God and God's interest in justice, we know those things aren't going to stand. The idea that no one will ever know is absurd. And so Christians need to remember that and live as if there really is a God. Let's go to Psalm 94. Psalm 94. When we live a wicked, foolish life, it's because we've practically given up on the idea of a God who is keeping track of us and what we do. Psalm 94 and verse 1, O Lord God of vengeance, O God of vengeance, shine forth. Rise up, O judge of the earth, repay to the proud what they deserve. O Lord, how long shall the wicked exult? They pour out their arrogant words. All the evildoers boast. They crush your people, O Lord, and afflict your heritage. They kill the widow and the sojourner and murder the fatherless. And they say, the Lord does not see. The God of Jacob does not perceive. Understand, O dullest of the people, fools, when will you be wise? He who planted the ear, does he not hear? He who formed the eye, does he not see? He who disciplines the nations, does he not rebuke? He who teaches man's knowledge, the Lord, knows the thoughts of man, that they are but a breath. So again, wicked people are those who declare by their actions or their words that God doesn't see them. And the psalmist calls them, look at verse 8 again, the psalmist calls them fools. Fools, when will you be wise? And I want you to notice that again, that connection between foolishness and atheism is really about practical things more than about statements of faith. It's about people, like in verse 4, pouring out arrogant words, verse 5, crushing your people, verse 6, killing the widow and the sojourner, living in an evil way because there's no God who pays attention. This is Ezekiel chapter 8. Ezekiel has a couple of these where he talks about the corruption that's happening in Jerusalem while Ezekiel is in Babylon. It says, he said to me, son of man, have you seen what the elders of the house of Israel are doing in the dark, each in his room of pictures? For they say, the Lord does not see us. The Lord has forsaken the land. So I can do it as long as I'm in the dark. God doesn't see. God's not paying attention. He's forsaken us. I can do what I want. And Ezekiel 9:9, he said to me, the guilt of the house of Israel and Judah is exceedingly great. The land is full of blood and the city full of injustice. For they say, the Lord has forsaken the land. And the Lord does not see. Ezekiel 9:9. So, what we're reading here is about how our behavior is impacted by what we think about God. And when we think that God's not paying attention, then we become fools and we live as fools. Here, we draw the ire of God because he does see, he does pay attention. Go with me to Romans 1. I want to look at one more passage, and then I'll come into the heart of what we're going to talk about in this time. Romans chapter 1. Romans 1, and I want to begin in verse 18. Romans 1 and verse 18, it says, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world and the things that have been made, so that they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but became futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. So what he says is, God has anger or wrath against all unrighteousness because, verse 19, what can be known about God is plain to them. God has shown it to them. And he talks about how, in verse 20, his invisible attributes are clearly seen in what he has made. We can understand from the world and the way it works that there is a God. But, verse 21, although they knew God, they did not honor him as God, nor give thanks. But they became futile in their thinking, their foolish hearts were darkened, and then, verse 22, claiming to be wise, they became fools. Well, how do we know they became fools? We know they became fools because look at what they did. Look at what they did. They became awful people. They begin to be idolatrous. Instead of honoring the God they know is there, they start to honor the gods that they make with their own hands. They start to worship creatures rather than the Creator. And then they begin to do all of these awful things. Verse 26 to 27 talks about the sexual excesses that came. And verse 28 to 32 talks about just how far things got. Okay, they became fools. But notice, they became fools because at the heart of their reasoning was, there's not a God, I don't need to pay attention to God. So, maybe not all atheists are fools, but here we're seeing that all fools are atheists. All right, hope you get my point. I want to talk for a minute about some profiles in practical atheism from the Bible. People who live this way, they're not atheists. At least it's not clearly stated, but they live like atheists, and I want to show you what that looks like. So let's go first to 1 Samuel chapter 25. If you're going to talk about fools in the Bible, you're probably going to come to this man named Nabal, 1 Samuel 25, because Nabal's name is the Hebrew word for fool, which makes you wonder what his mom was thinking, doesn't it? You're going to name your kid fool, but Nabal lives up to that name in 1 Samuel 25. Verse 3, 1 Samuel 25 and verse 3. Now the name of the man was Nabal, and the name of his wife Abigail. The woman was discerning and beautiful, but the man was harsh and badly behaved. He was a Calebite. Okay, so I think that tells you everything you need to know about that marriage and about where this story is going. Nabal is a very rich man. He has lots of sheep and goats. And at this time, David is on the run from Saul, and David has this throng of people around him. And David does a kindness to Nabal by having his men go and protect the group of shepherds that belongs to Nabal. So he takes care of him. And so after that, David sends to Nabal asking for a gift. Verse Samuel 25 and verse 9. When David's young men came, they said all this to Nabal in the name of David, and then they waited, and Nabal answered David's servants, "Who is David? Who is the son of Jesse? There are many servants these days who are breaking away from their masters. Shall I take my bread and my water and my meat that I have killed for my shearers and give it to men who come from I do not know where?" So, now everybody's heard of David. You've got to remember that. David is a household name. They heard of David in the Philistine camp. They know him there. Okay? Isn't this the one that they're singing songs about? Everybody knows who David is. This is a high insult to David. Okay, not only does he say no, he says, "This is my stuff. I'm not giving it to some runaway, some no good renegade." And so, David particularly, if you look at verse 21, David said, "Surely in vain I have guarded all that this fellow has in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed of all that belonged to him, and he has returned me evil for good." Evil for good. This is an unprovoked attack against me. I haven't done anything to him but goodness, and he has done nothing to me but evil. That's the point. So when you look at Nabal, you're looking at someone who repays good with evil. People do nice things to him. He does evil things to them. That's what a fool does. What I find to be a really interesting part of this story is how Nabal's wife and servants talk about him. Look at verse 14. One of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, "Behold, David sent messengers out of the wilderness to greet our master, and he railed at them. Yet the men were very good to us, and we suffered no harm, and we did not miss anything when we were in the fields as long as we went with them. They were a wall to us both by night and by day, all the while we were with them keeping the sheep. Now, therefore, know this and consider what you should do, for harm is determined against our master and against all his house, and he is such a worthless man that one cannot speak to him." That's his servant talking to his wife. And he says, he doesn't even go to Nabal and say, "Hey, master, you shouldn't have done that. David's coming with an army now." He goes to his wife because he knows that this is, you can't even talk to him. That's a fool. Now we're not talking about, well, what does he believe about God? We're not really there, are we? This is not about what is Nabal's statement of faith. This is about what kind of decisions does Nabal make. Nabal makes foolish decisions. He is a fool. So Abigail goes to save the day on behalf of her husband. Verse 23, when Abigail saw David, who is coming, by the way, to really do harm to the whole house of Nabal, When Abigail saw David, she hurried and got down from the donkey and fell before David on her face and bowed to the ground. She fell at his feet and said, "On me alone, my lord, be the guilt. Please let your servant speak in your ears and hear the words of your servant. Let not my lord regard this worthless fellow Nabal, for as his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him. But I, your servant, did not see the young men of my lord whom you sent." So Abigail says, whatever you do, don't listen to Nabal. Nabal is a fool. That's his name. That's what he does. And I think folly sounds a little sillier to us in English, but she's just saying his name is fool and he's a fool. Don't listen to him. And don't let yourself do anything dumb, David, because you have to deal with that guy. This is her husband. She talks about him that way. I wonder, it's just my wondering, how many messes Abigail had to clean up because Nabal was such a fool. How many times this kind of thing had to happen? Now, that's probably going to be the last time because God's going to strike him dead in a few days. But this is certainly a pattern I see that had probably played out before. So David can be reasoned with. David calms down. David thanks Abigail. And he doesn't act rashly. He kind of lets it go. A few days later, as I said, God strikes Nabal and he dies. So Nabal is a profile in practical atheism. In Nabal, we have the picture of the fool. The fool is somebody who thinks he can treat somebody however he wants. I will treat you however I want to treat you, however it suits me, whatever benefits me. And the only calculation in the mind of the fool is, what can they do back? Now, he didn't do very good calculating with David, by the way, but what can he do back to me? Can I get away with this, in other words? I'll treat you how I want, unless you're somebody who I fear retaliation from. And that's the only language that the fool speaks. I don't maintain good relationships. I've got money. I'm going to use it. I'm going to use my influence. I'm going to do what I want. And I'm going to treat people the way that I want. So what if he did something kind to me? I can repay his good with evil. I don't have to share what I have with anyone. That is practical atheism. What's the difference? If you treat people however you want, think that nobody will ever know, I get to do whatever I feel like. How is that different from a person who has no faith in God whatsoever? That's practical atheism. So when we treat people however we want, when we repay good with evil, we become practical atheists. We become a fool like Nabal, and all fools are at heart atheists. Let's go to Luke chapter 12. Talk about another fool. This one is from a story that Jesus tells beginning in verse 16, Luke 12 and verse 16, Luke 12, 16. And he told them a parable saying, "The land of a rich man produced plentifully. And he thought to himself, 'What shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops.' And he said, 'I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry.' But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God.'" So here we have the profile of the rich fool who teaches us that fools live only for themselves. This man's concern is only for him. Now, he is rich. And as he succeeds in his business, he has a crisis. He says, "What now? I'm doing so well. All my facilities are busting at the seams. I don't have room for all my grain. What shall I do? I know. I'll build some bigger barn so that I can have more. And I will keep building until the ultimate goal, which is that I can say to myself, 'You have many goods for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry.'" Notice that nowhere in all this description we get an insight into his heart, right? We get to hear this is what he says to himself. But in nowhere in that process does he think about anyone but himself at all. There is no consideration. We don't even know if he has a family. We don't know anything about him except that he has a really high view of himself. Verse 20. "But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be?'" The man has lived as a fool because he has focused all his money and attention on gaining more, and he has not prepared himself for what happens when his soul is required of him. Or, to use Jesus' terminology, he has laid up for himself treasure on earth. Problem with treasure on earth is you don't get to keep it. We don't stay on earth. Verse 21. So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. Did you notice that this man never denies having faith in God? It's not really what the story is about, is it? It's not about what does he believe. It's about how he lived and what he loved and who he helped and how he planned. It is about practical atheism. And this man is a fool because he lives only for himself. He lives as though he is the only person on earth, the only person who matters. If I have tons of crops, I don't help the hungry. No, it's not as if any excess beyond all the things that I have now, I could just give to someone else. No, no, it's got to be for me. I'm going to build something bigger so that I can hold everything I want. I don't think about what happens when my life is over and all the crops go somewhere else to somebody else. I don't think about God and how he might influence all my choices and my spending and my planning. Fools only live for themselves because they live as if there is no God. So, when we live as if the only person in the world that matters, the only factor that influences our decisions is what I want, what I feel like, how happy I am, what's going to make me feel good, how we can take our ease. When it's all about me, I'm living as a fool. And if I'm a fool, all fools are at heart atheists. Let's go to Matthew chapter 7. The last profile that I want to cover this morning is the foolish builder. The foolish builder. Matthew chapter 7 and verse 24. Jesus is finishing his Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 7, and he has some concluding thoughts about people and their responses to it. Matthew 7, 24, everyone then who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain fell, and the floods came, the winds blew and beat on that house, but it did not fall because it had been founded on the rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell. And great was the fall of it. Now, in this story, the foolish person is the one who builds on the shaky foundation. We get that idea. But sometimes I think we miss that what Jesus is actually articulating, the difference between the wise builder and the foolish builder, is what they do with the message. Verse 24, everyone who hears these words of mine and does them is like a wise man. Verse 26, everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them. Everybody hears. Remember, he's talking to an audience that's probably sat there listening to his sermon. Everyone hears, but some will hear and do, and some will hear and not do. And the difference there is the difference between wisdom and foolishness. So what he is teaching us is fools hear, but don't obey. They listen. They like it. They nod. They click the like button. They retweet it. Good stuff. Like that a lot. Makes me smile, makes me cry. But they don't ever actually do what they're called on to do. It's an irony to me that this has happened with this sermon, the Sermon on the Mount, for centuries. It has been that kind of sermon. The things in the Sermon on the Mount are deeply challenging. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard people rave about how great it is. Jesus' revolutionary teaching on the Sermon on the Mount about turning the other cheek, the teaching about judge not that you be not judged, the teaching that is so deeply challenging, and yet how often do we see people actually doing what Jesus says? That is very different. That is far more rare. And what I'm suggesting to you is that is practical atheism, hearing but not obeying, makes it as if there is no real God. This is just about some nice words that we like, and then we move on with our lives. We don't ever have to obey them. Nobody's paying attention to whether we obey. Nobody's checking up on whether we follow through. There is no real God. So Jesus was a good guy, had some smart things to say, but at the end of the day, we shut the book and move on with life. Practical atheism. So, if we live that way, it makes us fools, like that foolish builder building on the wrong foundation. So I hope you'll think about this. Mainly the thrust of what I want to say is that we have to make choices that reflect our faith. And as we do, we'll be wise and not foolish. Thank you for your attention. We'll be dismissed for our classes.